They're bad. They're boys. And occasionally, they talk about running. Yes, it's the Bad Boy Running Podcast with your hosts, Jody Rainsford and David Heller. Come back.
Baby, come back. With a bye, 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 bye. With a bye, 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 bye. I must admit I was a clone to be messing around. But that doesn't mean that you have to leave town. Come back.
Bye, 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 bye. Bye,
bye, bye, bye, bye. Bye, 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 bye. Hello, Jody Rainsford.
Hello, David.
Hello, Bad Boy Ronnie.
Hey, we're not tired in any way. Again.
Oh, my days. Actually, I'm pretty ruined. So, how are your legs? Oh, you didn't. Oh, you didn't.
I didn't run. I didn't do anything. I didn't. Oh, I just had a wander around. Why are you? Are you in pain?
Genuine. I've got massive DOMS.
Have you?
Oh, yeah. Really do. Yeah. Because
Why? Ooh. Why did you stand up there and show us what you're wearing on your bottom half? What was? Are those clownfish on your pants?
I'm standing up to. Yes, they are. I'm just standing up to feel my legs because. There we go. Lovely shorts. Great shorts. Yeah, my hamstrings and my calves are totally wrecked, and it just shows how running is different to other types of running, even in a straight line. Running very quickly is very different to running how we normally run.
Yeah, so I think we need to give the listener and the viewer a rundown exactly
yes.
of why you are run down.
Well, we've been out to see Om, and Om were doing a launch of a new running club, and during that we trained with some very, very high level athletes who are now part of the running team, and they were doing sprint training for some reason with 100 meters. So I've never done 100 meter sprints before, even 200 meters. I think I'm having only done once. I've done it in marathon training as a, hey, it's taper week, let's just do a few quicker things, but you're not going flat out, whereas this was really quite different to all other training. And
it was quite punchy. So I didn't do it under the guise of I need to film David doing it because that's really important. And what I did is there was half of people that were filming other people doing it, which was quite interesting. But what I thought was really interesting about this was that, you know, they're trying to give a bit of an edge to it. So they flew us over to Zurich. They took us to a stadium, a beautiful stadium, and a running track.
Really,
and it was
nice,
just a lovely day. And so they had a kind of press conference type thing. But the first part of that was us going down to the track, you seeing the runners, experiencing running with the runners and stuff like that. So it gives there's a lot of visual interest in the piece as well. So people have got things to kind of like do. And so what I would assume that you do, and what I've always done when I've been on like press trips and things like that,
yeah,
is that when they have this like the kind of like the running element part of it, it's really just there for show. Like there is some, you know, they understand that the press are there, they need to get the visuals. You know, we're going to go to a press conference. There is nothing about that press conference that you're going to want to watch or the keynotes or anything else like that. You need all the visuals on the track, all the visuals running, you know, the action shots, the things about, you know, talking to the athletes and things like that. You need all of those things. And so you kind of do that in a quite arbitrary manner. This would seem to be like a section of real training. I mean, like you were training for ages, and there was one point where you were talking to one of the athletes, and you were like, "Whoa, yeah, this is the thing." He goes, "Oh, this is still the warm up." And you go, "What? We haven't started yet." And we were like half an hour in at that point, and it just seemed to go
right with the codes. Yeah,
yeah, it just seemed to go on and on.
Yeah, and actually, because they had their coach. So to give a bit more background, so On have decided that they quite ambitious. I mean, crazy ambitious, but also
they've set up a running club, but it's not a running club you can be any part of. That's the thing. That's the thing, listener.
So they've set this target of trying to be the for the 2028 Olympics, because On's a running American running company, and to have the third most number of podiums of any trainer brand, which on the face of it seems like, what? Wow. But then you think, okay, Nike, Adidas, actually, then you think, who's the big third? I mean, Under Armour are trying to get number three.
Yeah.
But there isn't a big third, especially not in track. And so you actually, when you start to pick out who they need to take off, you're like, well, maybe a Puma. There's not that many other big product trainer brands who are dominating athletics. So they've to try and do this, they've also created this communities where they're taking the best young athletes from across Europe, and they're then train 3-year contracts for one, pretty sweet, and they're then going on training tour, it seems, together. So this was the launch of that. But their head coach was there, who was just doing a session with them, and literally just did a session with them that we then all did. And not only was it a session we all did, but you were doing 100 meter sprints, so you do 8 times 1 with 30 second rest. But because of the nature of the people there, some of the people didn't have their watches, so they weren't taking their own splits, and they're like, oh, I'll start with them. You had George, who incredibly quick, the on athlete, who was blitzing it out, and certain we'd then be the pressure when he then starts his rep, you've got, and you're counting down your 30 seconds, suddenly all these people who you know you finished ahead of are then coming up to the line, you're like, well, am I now behind, starting behind them? You're like, but I was ahead of you, I've got it. And so all the rest of the group are reducing their rest, and so you're suddenly getting like 27 seconds rest and that 25 seconds rest, and actually 8 times 100 is off 25 seconds rest is pretty brutal. And it's all being filmed as well across Europe by various people. You're like, oh my word.
Yeah, no, there's not, oh, we're just going to film like one person, because I think people were picking up on social media from other channels and things like that, you know, spotting you doing like your warm-ups and things like that. So yeah, everyone was being published as well. I thought that this, I mean, seeing you do hundreds was very interesting, because it's not something you've done. I think there was something much more interesting, and that was you doing drills. Hadn't realised just how inflexible you are. Like, it was, I thought all of that inflexibility was down to like your injury or something, but you are, I mean, it's something else. It's incredible. I was like, what is going on here? I thought you were taking the piss, actually, for a large part of that.
And this is genuinely me at my most flexible, because for the last God knows how many months, even before Christmas, I've probably mentioned it before in the poddy, whenever I make a cup of tea, I do my hamstring stretches. I do kind of 10 to 15, 20 quick hamstring stretches while it's brewing. Every morning, every night, or every time I go upstairs in the office, I do five long calf stretches. Like, this is me at the most flexible I've ever been. And still, yeah, you're about a foot higher than most people as they're leaning down on their drills.
And it makes you look like an absolute tit. It made for great video. It made for great video. It's going to look incredible. If you're watching this on the YouTube channel, I'm interspersing this right now. You're probably watching David right this second.
Oh, dear God. Is there going to be any particular music in the background?
Oh, do you know what?
Anyway.
No, you say that. I put it on Instagram as soon as it happened, and I put the Steptoe and Son theme tune along with it, and it proved very popular.
Yeah, it sounds about
obvious,
right.
Obvious.
But it was but we thought we'd talk about it, partly because, you know, Honor Flynn's out there and, you know, Spy PR, but partly because part of the reason I went, I wanted to see what actually happened at events like this. A little bit for Caffeine Bullet to get a sense of how it works, you know, what you need to do, what you need to consider. But also because I don't think we've really talked that much about PR on the podcast before, and we try and analyze every little bit of the industry and get a sense of how it all connects together. And I haven't really been to many events with lots of journalists or PR other than the running awards since Runners World Awards in like 2013s, 2012s, when they used to do those on the boat or in the local place. And so I thought it'd be interesting for us to really relay who's there, what they're doing, what the expectation is, how people are treated, all those things, because it's all part of the industry, and it's all part of when you read an article or when you see a review, understanding what pressures or what buttering of the bread.
What has been said, what has been fed, are you looking at it through a certain prism, you know, through a certain lens, and, you know, is how one person reported it? Because I think the interesting thing was that most people who were there, when we kind of met up, it was a really long... We were up like 3:30 in the morning. We went out and back in the day, so it was quite punchy. So we went out back in the day, but no one knew what was going. No one knew what we were there. Everyone was sort of starting to go, do you know anything?
It's like this top secret what this lodge. Is about?
Yeah, it was top secret lodge. We had no idea, and we all kind of like standing there. What I thought was really interesting is, which, you know, feeds into what it's like when you go to these things, is that it's really kind of a catch up with all like the journalists together. Like that's the becomes it comes. And actually it's really interesting, because there's obviously loads of stuff that you want to talk about and catch up with other people about as well. And then you also can like provide your own analysis to each other as to what you think about it.
Which is
quite insightful. So you're never really properly getting, you know, a completely cold take on something. When we report back now, I can't help all the conversations that we've had with the other journalists affecting my thinking. We can't give you a cold take on it, because we've obviously kind of been influenced through the discussions with other. But it's interesting. Like, you know, one thing that you were talking about was the people there. So what happened is that we did that track session. We then went into a room to offer. They were doing keynotes, so they had the different founders of the brand all talking about, you know, exactly what it was that we were there for. Then we had an introduction to the different athletes, and then some sort of question and answer session as well to kind of understand, you know, what they were doing. And so though I think there was about 80 journalists there in various things, various guises, from all over Europe. And I don't know whether they were kind of like desperate to get numbers or something, but we were obviously there filling up the numbers.
It makes you realise how, because there really was a huge number from the UK versus other countries. I don't know whether that's because Aspire are a British PR agency, or maybe we've just got stronger brands in PR or in podcasts, YouTube channels, magazines, because we are English speaking and therefore we get global audiences.
Whole presentation was in English. That was the thing. We had, what's it called? Spanish, German, French, Swiss, and the whole presentation was in English.
Yeah, I mean, and there's little bits behind the scenes that I just think is super funny. So for one, everyone gets there. There's cups of coffee. No one can work the coffee machine, and there's suddenly a queue of people are like, what are these little pods? Okay, I haven't used this one before. Everyone starts eyeing up, and it's not just me, literally everyone was eyeing up the On mugs, that were these metal mugs. Everyone was like, ooh, these are really nice. These are super light.
I forgot to steal one.
And then there was that point of everyone thinking, and it was people looking around like, ooh, these are actually pretty nice mugs. Like, are these part of it? Are we meant to take them? Should we take them? Should we ask to take them? Should we just take them and not ask? Like, where's the line with this? But you could see everyone was like,
It became the mug situation for a little while, didn't it? Yeah, it was the, what do we do? Forget about the brand. How do we get these mugs out of here?
And then lunch where literally zero vegan food.
It's just what you expect to go to the continent.
And there was a sadness I found it a bit of a sadness in how readily you accepted that as a, yeah, this is just what happens. And that really surprised me, because I genuinely thought that now most places had that awareness and at least had some options, and it was, you were just like, not a single thing.
There was apples and that was it, and they'd probably smeared that on pig fat and not told me about it or something. I just don't expect it. I should have. That's why I bought something on the way in. But I should have brought some lunch with me, because I thought, oh, they might have some bread or, you know, something, you know, some sad bread based item that I could eat, or a roll or something like that. But no, they didn't have it. It was all like those kind of really fashionable, you know, kind of like a single falafel dipped in some mint yogurt, and I couldn't recognise the other things, like mini fish and chips that, you know, they're the little bites that all look great, but you need like 20 of them in actually to feel like you've had a proper meal.
But you can only take one because it looks rude, sir. Yeah. But during the presentation, it was because they had the two co-founders and the coach. And I like this initiative because I think partly, one, you often have individuals, and these were all from big countries. But for example, when we were talking to the Dutch runner, athletics isn't very big in the Netherlands, it seems, and it's never on TV. He was saying that you'll get is it Daphne Schiffers who's on there? They'll talk about her. She does well, but other than that, there's just no exposure. And so we're quite unique or lucky in the UK, where athletics, still because of the nature of the BBC, it's desperate for content that's cheap, and so Sky hasn't taken athletics off the BBC. They've taken all the other sports, BBC, so yeah. Athletics is often on as the cheap thing to show. But even things like the Diamond League isn't really reported on that widely. But firstly, this initiative is quite nice in that it gives athletes from countries where they might not have that support more support. 3-year contracts as well, really good. But throughout, and you were saying this, JD, about how On have taken quite a risk in that they didn't have an athletics trainer ready when they started this program, and even when they signed up the athletes to contracts, because part of the concept was to bring the athletes on board to then work with them to actually be the product testers and the product developers. And they showed a video of them doing some development. And Dominic, who we've interviewed on the podcast, who from the refugee team, or formerly from the refugee team, was one of the product testers. And so, yeah, it's weird where you're an athlete, sign up for a 3-year contract in the starts of your careers, and you're like, what am I going to wear? Don't know yet.
I know. Quite, I mean, a big risk. You know, considering how important the shoe is to all of this, that is a big risk. And it's difficult because I think there was a certain amount of scepticism, I think, demonstrated in the... Well, no, there is not necessarily in the... There's a certain amount of scepticism demonstrated around it. I think whenever brands go, oh, the athletes are involved with, you know, the development of the shoes and things like that. And it's a really good thing for them to say. You do wonder just how much are they really involved in the development. And a few people kind of touched on that. But if you don't have a shoe... If you don't have any, and they readily admitted, which I thought was quite a sort of a brave move, that like they said, the shoe wasn't good enough, that what they had was not good enough in order to achieve it, which is a big thing for any brand to say. I suppose if you were kind of a challenger brand like they are, it benefits you. It benefits you as like going, like, we need to do better when we're going to do better, and this is our plan to do better, and we're doing it better with these people along us. The other question is, you know, they kind of alluded to this, but you don't know how much. Like, what were the other options in front of those athletes? Like, did those, you know, because those athletes are, you know, up and coming athletes. Obviously, they're, you know, youth champions. You know, one of the things they gave us a goodie bag, which is this. If you're watching this on YouTube, you can see this. Give us a goodie bag, and they gave us this little thing, which I was thinking, oh, what's in here? What's in here? And it's actually got a...
I opened that last night. You're like, ooh.
Oh, has it gone?
I was going to say, pair of...
open it. It goes, you know, claim your free, you know, pair of shorts or whatever at the event. I'm like, damn it, I missed out. But actually, what it does is it gives you like a selection of the athletes. And you look at kind of what the athletes have got. You know, they talk about, you know, they're indoor champions, outdoor champions. You know, they have options in front of them. It's just... I don't know what those other options are. I don't know how many, you know, few people know what those options are.
Does Nike sign up someone of their level yet?
Yeah, that's it. And so is this experimental in that respect, in that, you know, no one has signed people up at this point to do these things. And so this is a kind of experiment. And so, you know, they didn't have other options. So this actually was a bit of a no-brainer for them. Or is this, you know, a proper kind of moment where people are choosing these other challenger brands over Nike? Because I find it very difficult to think anyone would go, I'm going to not choose Adidas or Nike. I think that's a very, very difficult situation to be put in.
But I certainly don't think you get a three-year contract where you have a coach who's taking you to training camps with like a Nike or an Adidas for this type of running. If you look at the NN running team, seem to be, if you're going for marathons, half marathons, that's where you want to be. Because if you look at Jake Smith or Ninka Brinkman, they've both signed with them. They're now at altitude camps. They're doing all those things. And I think that's because of the money and the exposure of marathons and half marathons is so much greater for brands. They'd actually focus on that. Whereas things like track, you don't hear of, well, for one, things like UK
Athletics. Yeah, but surely it's the other way around. Surely track athletes, when track athletes do well, their exposure is much higher than the marathon runners. And like, if we look at the National Running Show, which we're going to be at this weekend, it might be too late for you to hear that. But you know, it's the track athletes there. Those are the kind of the you know, for a long time, those are the ones that have dominated, because those were the kind of success stories. And
the Olympic athletes have dominated.
Yeah,
but then who's won a marathon? Paula Radcliffe. That's it. There's no one else who's won a marathon. Mo Farah's not even won a marathon. I mean, he's maybe won, was it Dubai Marathon? I think.
I mean, he's not even won a recent 10K, but we can talk about that in a minute.
He's not even won the Somali Man Marathon, you know. But, yeah, New York, Boston, these things are televised year round. London, televised year round, followed globally, race by 40,000 people. Whereas the Olympics is one in 4 years. Outside of that, then no one really knows. And yeah, you can also, as NN Running, you'll get all these other marathons that actually are smaller marathons, but still winning those is, you know, Milan Marathon or Manchester, or it gets noticed. And if we think of people like our Colin McCourts, or where we've spoken to other athletes, and actually we're going to speak to Jack from Australia, who's training America at the moment. The really good athletes at their age tend to be in American colleges. They all go to American colleges to get scholarships to then be funded there, and then you're kind of left to yourself if you're not podiuming. And if you think about Laura Muir, or you know, she's still studying, and you don't hear of these big training groups of young athletes being taken to altitude training, to having these small camps. And we spoke a few weeks ago about how Adidas are now doing the ultra cool, we've got a Netflix type series on YouTube following this frat style house of international athletes all training in America at college, and they've now formed their team. And that was part of what I was intrigued by, is this turning into a real world athletics? But it seems actually that they haven't really considered the marketing angle yet.
No, they didn't. We wanted to talk about that. We wanted to talk about that. I thought, you know, because I thought this is the edge that they could get, is the fact is that, that, you know, they're not given like the training, they're not given the kind of the media training, the understanding about the social media profiles, and it, you know, all the things that, that they need to be doing early on in order to make sure, you know, because you'd think that would be built into that contract. You'd be built into it. Like, you constantly need to, you know, tell those stories of the of what you're doing. But it was a bit of a, I don't know, I feel like not necessarily a bit of an afterthought, but it wasn't central to what they were talking. I thought, you know, you've got a 3-year contract with someone. You'd normally get them to do all of those things as part of it. And I was surprised.
And one of the athletes has 3 Instagram posts, which I think brilliant. It's clearly not, that's their focus. And there were a few hard questions by the interviewer where there were a few single word answers or a few very short answers, and like, okay, you're not going to expand on any question I'm asking you, right? Okay, this is awkward because I've done my 4 questions, and so clearly they are results focused first, which I think is quite nice actually. And the intention is to then bring this to Australasia next.
Because this isn't the first part of it. They've got the first group of athletes who are, is it in Boulder that they said they were?
Boulder, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So they've got the first group of athletes who are training there, and this is the launch of the European part of it as well, with O'Shaughnessy being
but
the
it,
next.
Seeing the journalists there. Everyone's now has a different type of journalism, and so press conferences don't really work in the same way as they probably did before podcasts, before YouTube.
No,
because
you just
have journalists turn up and they write.
You are print or broadcast,
yeah,
and those two things are very narrow. It's very, because there's only one way to do it. If you're print, you're waiting to go to print. And so you're writing a specific piece that goes on that day. Same with broadcast. You're writing a specific broadcast, things like that. You know, now we're talking about it like day after. We've, you know, posted about it.
And even though there was... that's the thing. We're not really snippets interviews. And so actually I'd like to really interview Thomas, the coach, at some point. I think George, who's the English athlete on the programme, he's... one, funny and quite outspoken, hates cyclists.
He's got loads of time. I've got loads of time. I've got to do loads of interviews. I'm not sure. Can you imagine if he had an agent? The agent would be going, don't say any of those things. I've got loads of time. I'll do a bit of training and I've got loads of time. I can spend it. Let's go and do it now. I can get some of the other
athletes
lovely. On.
Yeah, it was just super fun and lovely. And and so you, for the PR agency and for the brand, it's now quite tricky to actually manage a event where you're having to think about the different ways in which people want to create content. So you had Jason from Athletics Weekly there, who is doing a short snippet that could probably go out next week, next month. And then, but then you had the run testers, who are 3 running journalists or sports journalists who also have a YouTube channel, and they're partly thinking, I'm normally commissioned for pieces for specific magazines, but then we've got our channel, but the channel's testing products and there's no product, and so, but we don't want, and one of the writers was there with Coach Magazine, but also the editor of Coach Magazine was there, and so they were like, we don't want to be seen as, we want to be seen as 3 independent people connected to different magazines and journals with the PR agency. So we're still all invited to stuff because it might be slightly different angles.
Yeah,
but then I think we're here for run testers. We're then here for run testers, and we don't want to be seen as one invite for that, because suddenly then the other people are potentially missing out on their income for doing article. And then you had us as the long form podcast, and we're never going to be interviewing Mark or Thomas for an hour to an hour and a half while we're there. And so it's like, how do you actually manage that room where you're sending people round to try and create formats that might not work in the environment you're in? So
yeah,
how do you then get, how do you launch? Yeah.
Yeah, because I think the other thing is that not having been to a like a press launch or something for such a long time, how much more kind of relaxed it was. Because normally, as we're going in,
oh, really?
you'd normally have the PRs briefing you well before by going, you know, there's an embargo on this. The whole idea of embargoes just doesn't work anymore. Oh, there's an embargo on this. We're going to be doing these things, you know.
Launch days.
We recommend that you speak to so-and-so. So-and-so's going to give you the background on this. So-and-so's going to give you this. You know, it's very kind of like, it always used to be like managed in that respect. Like, you need to speak to this person because this person really wants a quote of theirs in whatever you write. And then there's always this, because there's always the politics going on and stuff like that. Whereas I think just and I don't know whether this is, you know, the nature of PR at the moment having to deal with this, or whether this is just Aspire and Vicky was able to, but she was just very like, who do you want to speak to? You know, and that changed as the event went on as well. You know, that, you know, who we thought would be good to speak to changed based on, you know, who'd fit with the podcast, who, you know, actually, you know, meets the needs that we have, that we think you want to listen to. And it was just much more kind of relaxed in that sense. You know, there's never been any talk about, oh, so what kind of coverage do you think you're going to give us as a result of this? You know, this really needs to be mentioned, or anything else like that. All that really sort of like tight management that you kind of used to have. It just seems much more, because I think that's, because the problem is that how can you control us? How can you? I mean, that's a good question generally, but how can you really control the, like, the output of what anyone does? You can, you know, you can phone, especially, you know, with Runner's World or with a lot of those things. If you're an advertiser, you have some element of sway, but I don't think you really have any sway anymore, because, you know, people aren't that sort of beholden to advertisers. But you have such a lack of control that all you ever really can do now is just give them everything they want. And that's it. And I can't see how you can manage it any other way.
And actually, maybe honesty is that best policy, where you, rather than just try and market everything and try and say everything's shiny, say, like, we've had a lot of feedback that they don't perform, trainers don't perform as well as we'd hope. And this is our progression, and this is our acknowledgement, and this is...
And that's the thing. And, you know, sometimes, I think in the past, it used to be a little bit, because, you know, if you're on a print publications and you had advertisers, you know, there would be a kind of, all right, let's not mention, you know, the things that didn't work, or let's not mention that. But, you know, now, with much more interaction from readers and immediate feedback on things, like, you just can't pull the wool over people's eyes in the way that they, you know, they kind of tried to do it in the past, both... as a publication trying to protect your advertiser, and as an advertiser trying to protect your brand. Like, people will pick that apart and then see you as a non-credible organisation. So I think there is that recognition that, you know, you have to have that honest conversation, and you have to be honest about those things as well. And the other thing is, you know, you can't, like, all the journalists are talking to each other in the room. All the people are talking... I mean, I don't... we've classed ourselves as journalists in this respect. All the journalists and us are in the room discussing these things. And, you know, it's really clear, you know, that when we don't believe something, or when there's something that, you know, doesn't quite make sense, or, and, you know, it's just... But it's an issue. What I think was really interesting is that there used to be this kind of... because one thing you were talking about there was about kind of access... And, you know, it's really political, not between journalists necessarily, but it's really political in trying to secure coverage for things, because there's a clear pecking order that people go in. And you always have to try and make sure that you are at these events by doing that, by saying, look, I need to come to this event because, you know, I cover this for these publications and I write something slightly different, or I, you know, do something slightly different in that respect. When I was doing this for film and TV and home entertainment and stuff like that, it used to be the case of, like, you had to kind of, like, help out the PRs, and you'd have this kind of unwritten rule, which I'm not sure this exists anything about. They'd go, like, you'd be a PR and they'd have, like, they'd always have a load of shit films that they had one good film and had a load of shit films, and they'd go to you, look, I just need, if you can cover just one of these shit films, we know that this film is not going to be amazing, and things like, if you could cover just one of these, like, films and do an interview with something, you know, and try and get something in there about it, I'll make sure that you'll definitely get on the junket for the other one, you know, with an interview with so-and-so. So there was always that kind of trade-off, like, but they were honest about it. They were kind of honest, like, this is never going to be a bestseller, this is never going to, but there's a kind of a trade-off. I don't know if that really happens anymore, and I don't, you know, I don't know in that thing, but I think there has to be kind of that
used to happen in comedy as well.
Oh, really?
That happened on television where we'd have, so when I was working on Flipside, where we'd be booking, who was on there? People like Matt Lucas and the like, and got Carl Pilkington, and so their agents would also be, and I don't think the individuals themselves knew this, but they'd be like, oh yeah, you know, I could get you Matt, but you know, we're really trying to help promote this new
or
so and so who could be seen, like, you know, if it would come as pairs often, and it would be
the clients probably then, don't know that they're leverage for other clients as well. That's incredible.
And I think even with Carl came on with someone else from XFM when we got him on. Because that was part of the deal, and then the other person's like, "Yeah, you know, if you want to book us, book me again," and everyone's thinking, "You know, you're only here for Carl, right? We all know this, right?" even within that, for us, actually meeting the journalist is part of it, because now I love Ben from Runner's World, but I forgot that he's got such a good story of when he spent several months just getting ripped for Men's Health magazine, and it's so interesting what he learned and what he did. So we're hoping we can do a podcast about that, speaking to the Run Testers YouTube channel and hearing about all the products they review and some of the terrible products. Thought that would be a really good episode where we've done a kit product, but that's more to do with approaches of how to pick your kit, whereas this would be, right, what is the absolute garbage out there? What's the difference between marketing BS and the reality of it? How are they dealt with by the manufacturers, given that they've now got this very large YouTube channel that just tests lots of kit? So it's also about getting those stories and meeting people who can help with good guests and things. So I think it was good, really good trip, fun trip, interesting trip, and hopefully we'll give us loads of content for you guys for the next few months at least.
four or five minutes.
Feel free
to, you know, send us on any other trips. One thing that I think I've talked about before, but is just very, very noticeable when I went from entertainment journalist to health and fitness journalist, is lack of alcohol, lack of cakes, lack of music and stuff as well on press junkets, and how everyone is like fit and healthy rather than desperate to start boozing. If as a running brand you want to adopt a new approach, I would highly recommend it, because I think, you know, you'd really stand out in the kind of the fitness world if you took that approach. I think that's something to do.
I mean, we're ready for that. We're ready. So, should we do some quick news roundup?
Before we do that, there was one thing that you mentioned. So, we've had an idea, listener, viewer, we are, because we're, you know, you're watching it, if you're watching this on YouTube, you know that, you know, we're growing the channel and everything, you know, we're always about marketing, we're always about growth, we're always about authenticity, and one thing that that's been pointed out to us is that the nature of what we do means that we don't think about SEO. You know, all of our headlines are related to something that is funny to us, but you know, people don't search it. So so we're doing a renewed push on SEO, and we're creating a new segment in order to make sure that we somehow capture some content which is either clickbaity or is good for SEO, and we're going to be calling this the SEO segment. And what we're going to do, we're just going to randomly talk about a subject for 2 to 3 minutes, which is the optimum amount for a video. And we can have your suggestions as well for this and everything. But we're going to do it quite blatantly because and not try and shoehorn it into anything else. Because, well, we are shoehorning it in, kind of.
I think shoehorning's fine. I think we should do more of the shoehorning, surely.
Shoehorns, where did they go? That might be something. I mean, people aren't asking that question, but that is a good question. You used to get shoehorns in crackers.
Shoehorn manufacturers.
The shoehorn manufacturers have gone under?
Yeah, they unionized and, you know, all went terrible from then on.
But the thing that I wanted to ask you was as a result of what we were just talking about there. And this isn't necessarily something searching for, but I think it's an interesting question. Right, you talked there about the Olympics only being 4 years, every 4 years. And then you've got, you know, another thing. And so that only gives a certain amount of profile to some of those sports, but particularly athletics. Like, people associate athletics, I think, with the Olympics. FIFA were recently thinking about changing the format of the World Cup to the World Cups every 2 years. And, of course, UEFA were very unhappy of it and all the different things. What about the Olympics every 2 years? Should we have... Because you could do that. That would be doable. Should you have the Olympics? Could you have the Olympics every 2 years?
It's
a long time to wait.
I don't want it.
It's a long time.
I don't want it. Yeah, it is. And because every 2 years, you're always thinking about it. And you're already into the next cycle. And there's an element of 4 years, you forget about it. It's really exciting when it comes around. And you genuinely think, oh, this is going to be great, and you start planning out your summer. All the athletes from 2 years out are suddenly starting that cycle, and there's an element of 4 years. It's quite nice where people just retire, and like the horror show of Mo fighting for relevancy. Yeah.
You say a horror show, I would say that it's one of the most wonderful things to watch. There's nothing better than a fading athlete, a fading actor or actress, or anything that's fading to try and seek relevance. I don't know. I just wonder whether increasing the frequency of it means that we would get a bigger turnover. Like, people would you know, do five Olympics in half the amount of time. And then retire earlier, and then there'd be a higher turnover of athletes, and then you'd have more people willing to commit to go to the Olympics because you weren't wasting 4 years. You know, you wouldn't do 4 years and then do it and then have to wait another 4 years. Don't you think that would actually make it more exciting?
It just dilutes all of that, though. So, because athletes are athletes, and there's very few people who have that in between moment, I think, where they're, should I go to the next Olympics? You only do that when you're older, or if you're absolutely skint. And if you're absolutely skint, it's because you're not quite good enough, or you haven't got the funding situation. And having Olympics where you have more Olympic champions, there's your Olympian champion for less long, so less time to kind of generate income from your performances. So and also the reality of the Olympics now is it's propping up regimes, and same with FIFA, all these cities that can really afford it.
Why has it not been discussed?
It's corrupt.
The Olympic Committee, I would say, is on a par with how corrupt FIFA are. And they surely must have seen this as a money-making opportunity. Like, brands would love this. It's easy for brands. You just keep. You can pump them in. You can get, you know, double the amount of Olympics in half the time. Why hasn't it been considered?
And I don't think they'd find the cities. I think they'd really struggle. That's the issue. Double those cities, and even now, after Tokyo, and if you look at how much it's been costing countries, and same with the World Cup, because they are linked. That the impact of mass events now. People are, the cities are aware of them, and like, who can afford the Olympics? Like, who actually thinks it's gonna really help them? And that's the trouble. You just end up with Belarus, Saudi, like Russia bidding, and so Dubaz, what do you think? What do you think? Do you want more Olympics, less Olympics? And it just does make it less special.
I don't know.
We got to talk.
Let's talk about Mo. Come on, this was the talk of the moment. Go on. So explain the context.
I mean, there's very few races. Well, I can't think of many times I've been texted quite as much about something that doesn't seem that exciting. But Tom Dart messaged first time saying, "Are you watching the Vitality 10K London 10K race?" Which is a good event in that it's almost a mini London marathon where you do get people. Yeah, sure, but you get people coming from all you know, around the country to actually take part in it. Come for the weekend, bank holiday weekend. Yeah, and Mo lost to Ellis Cross.
Was he expected to win?
Yeah, Mo's absolutely expected to win. This was, well, I think he was expected to win coming in. From what I've heard about Mo's training since, still probably expected to win, but less of a surprise. But I mean, Mo's career at the moment is very managed, where I think he's quite aware that he is counting down the clock. And so it's managing appearances so you get paid appearance fees, and also managing appearances so that you keep up the pretense that you're still very good. Because him jogging into a win in a bad time where he's not been challenged still looks like he's the best, or like he's still incredible. He's still incredible, but... whereas losing to anyone outside of the very best in the world, then you're suddenly yesterday's man. So yeah, this was fantastic in that Ellis Cross from St Mary's as well. If you're an international listener, that's where Mo's from, and it's where with Dale Clutterbuck, who we interviewed about the beer mile, that and Loughborough are probably the two biggest universities for runners to go to in the UK, and Mo just didn't have it in him. So Ellis, young club runner, not registered in elite, incredible.
So I just want to understand a couple of things here. Firstly, was this a case of Mo not performing, or did Ellis have the race of his life? Like, that's an important thing, I think, to understand.
This was a bit of both. So Mo was maybe a minute down on what his 10K time would be, which is quite a lot. And apparently Mo's had issues in his winter training. He's had a few months off. And a few months off is actually quite a lot. So, but yeah, he's a minute down. Like Mo should have had a far faster time. Ellis had a great run, and he's up and coming, and he's got a kick to him. So it's surprising that he came second, really, given that there was a really good field. You know, it wasn't just Mo who's there. There is an elite field out for this. And you've got some named athletes there. So
the other thing is, isn't this just an outlier? Like, if this was a consistent thing, isn't this, like, this is like the first time this has happened to Mo, isn't it? Like this kind of, like,
yeah.
I wouldn't say it's an embarrassment, but it's like a talking point.
It is, and this probably ties in with the pressures on him now, because I'd imagine he was there partly for an appearance fee, and partly because he thought he could win it even unfit. But if he was managing his career differently, say if he was on the way up and he didn't have that appearance fee and he was just thinking about training and results or reputation, then he might not have raced when he knew he was subpar. And you have people like Chris Thompson there, who was, you know, British marathon champion at the Olympic trials. So some top end athletes who, if Mo isn't on his day, could start pressuring a little bit. But you'd still think that Mo should cruise this.
But is this a good thing for him? Is this a good thing for him to have happened? To have kind of like, in the long run?
Great for Ellis. For Mo, no. I mean, I can't think of any real benefit to this. I don't think Mo's lacking motivation to train hard. I don't think he ever will, ever has. But it's almost a wake-up call of, actually, you know, unless you have perfect training block, you're not going to be challenging. And so now's the time to think about, like, are you still coming out for races or not?
I think there's a different perspective to this. Now, I can't offer the athlete's perspective because I have no idea about that.
Yeah.
But I do know is that Mo is an advertising and marketing genius. And perhaps, just perhaps,
he is.
That in his bid to stay relevant, the problem is he doesn't have a good enough story. He needs his Tiger Woods moment. He needs to hit a rock bottom.
Or the comeback.
From which he can recover. And maybe this is just the part of it that he is willing to take a hit. Willing to take a hit in terms of, you know, the kind of the negative. He needs those negative things. Because remember that moment when Tiger Woods, won whatever the golfing tournament was for the first time since, you know, he hit rock bottom. And they did this segment where he basically went through all of the interviews with people saying he'll never do it again. It's just one of the most wonderful pieces of film that you'll see, because it's one of those things that you're proving people wrong, proving that, you know, the people who've never been in that situation, that, you know, that you could never challenge someone who is a true champion. I think he needs that. He needs that. He wants it. This is part of that. It's just an incredible strategic marketing move by him. Do you agree?
I mean, it's ballsy if that's what he's going for. I'll give him that.
Well, I tell you what is ballsy. It's ballsy. He's doing that, doing this massive thing, and then showing up at the National Running Show the following week, where that's all people are going to be talking about. That's all. I'd be interested to see how they manage that in terms of the questions and the kind of whether you'll be allowed to ask those questions and whether he'll field those questions or whether he shuts it down or whether it'll be a Chris Rock thing where he'll go, oh, I know you all want to ask me about this, but I'm still processing it. And eventually I'll talk about it, but not today.
Yeah, it's tough, isn't it? Because that is going to be that's one of his biggest speaking events he'd have ever gone to in the UK in the history of his career. Other than things like Sports Personality of the Year. And everyone is smirking a little bit. Well, not everyone, but a lot of people. And I think he'll address it. I think he will mention it. And that will be something that, you know, you'd have to be a fool not to be aware.
National Running Show, you've got your press release. National Running Show, you've got your press release there. Get it. Because when he mentions it, it'll be possibly the first time that he talks about it.
The big soundbite, yeah. Because I was wondering whether we should get Ellis on the podcast. And I wasn't sure whether it would be, if it is just a few throwaway lines, or whether it is worth a full interview. What do you think, Dubadders? Should we go and get him? Get him on to talk about the experience.
We can call the episode "How to Beat Mo Farah at a 10K," which I think is a great title for the episode. So worth doing just for that. It'd be just interesting to see, from Ellis's perspective, like what it's like to, you know, obviously you have an expectation that, you know, you're an up and coming runner, you're going to be dealing with the media at some point, you're going to have to do that thing. But dealing with the media before you expect to be dealing with the media, when this kind of thing goes viral in that respect, and then the expectation that might put on you going forward.
Yeah, are people going to be watching the next race? And does it change your status within... Actually, it would be a good interview. Does it change your status within races? Are you now being invited to things? Are you now getting appearance fees? Are you now in contention for... does it change your belief in how you train?
New slogan, better than Mo.
Yes, indeed.
Chris N.
Are you now sponsoring a rival product to Mr. Muscle?
Ellis Cross, is it?
Ellis Cross, yeah, that's right.
Ellis Cross. Better than Mo. There we are, that's it. You've got...
Yeah, get a rap song out or something.
There's a better better slogan to be had around Mo, isn't there? I'm sure Dubadders can come up with something, a Mo related tagline,
like Mo More for Ellis. Instead of Mo, no more Mo More or something like that. Yeah. Well, we've been going on for a fair bit, so quick roundup. You see, Finley Wilde breaks Paddy Buckley record. which impressive. He had a skateboarding accident, I think, prior to it, that people were
that's an incredible
wondering
excuse.
Whether he
getting your excuses in early.
Yes. But also he it was one of those stories where, because he was getting I think Kim Collins was ribbing him a bit about it, but people saw that he was wrecking the Paddy Buckley and then wondering whether he was actually going to, you know, give it a proper attempt. So that is, we'll try and get him on for the National Running Show. But yeah, I mean, incredible run. Maybe save it to next time, Samsung advert, because that's picked up. Talk about brands being out of touch.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Oh, I thought that when I saw that.
We're
going to talk about that. In fact, what we need to do, we can either do a poll or a thread in the Facebook group about that, because I'd be really interested in people's thoughts about that before we talk about it, because I think that's particularly interesting. You know, which team came up with that one?
Yeah. And something else I thought was quite interesting, it's quite topical. So the Saatchi Gallery, Sophie Power photo is on display.
Oh, is it?
And they're doing 50 years of women's sport, celebrating 50 years of women's sport, and showing some 50 most incredible images for that period. So I thought some people might want to know about that, get down to that. And she's got a great photo of her in front of her photo on the wall, which is great. So it seems like a really, really good thing to go to if you've got a bit of spare time in the next few weeks. Anything else to quickly catch up on before we round up today, Jody, would you say?
I don't think so. I think when Mo's in the news, he dominates the headlines. And so I think that's the kind of big one. I'd be interested to see what other people's takes are on it as well. So if you haven't headed into the Facebook group, please jump in the Facebook group, ask questions. If you're watching this on YouTube, put in your comments, you know, where does Mo come from this? If you were advising Mo on what to do next, both from a PR marketing perspective and from an athletics perspective, I'd love to find out, you know, what it is that you would suggest he does.
And which brand should he now represent? When we had Gareth Southgate, he missed his penalty. He did some
pizza
adverts.
That was brilliant.
Straight away. Yeah, Pizza Hut afterwards. So what should Mo now be advertising, given his result? In fact, we'll put that in the Facebook group as one of our questions to see what people come up with. And we'll let you know what the best responses are in the next few weeks. Well, thanks for listening, guys. If you've got any suggestions of guests, then let us know. Or if there's any particular products, things like that, you'd like us to talk about, review, then get in touch. I'm David at badboyrunning.com.
And if you want to join the conversation, head over to the Facebook group, answer 3 questions, and we'll let you in so you can join in any of the conversations that have been sparked for the things that we've talked about today. If you want merch, head to store.badboyrunning.com. And we have plenty of product in there for you.
Well, thanks for listening, guys. Please leave reviews if you can. It really helps with our exposure, which helps us get better guests. We'll be at the Run Show. Would have been in the past by this comes out, but this Saturday, slating Mo.
If you've got slating Mo while he's on the other state. Oh, no, we're on the same stage now, aren't we? Are we?
We are on the same stage.
We are on the same stage. We can't get away with that stuff.
True. Although, shall we ask the question? Ding dong, ding dong. Who knows? Who knows? We'll see. Well, that's just it, guys. And we will see you next week.
See you later. Bye 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 bye
bye bye bye bye
bye bye
bye bye bye bye bye bye
admit I was a clone to be messing around, but that doesn't mean that you have to leave town. Come back, yes, and give me one more try, cause a love like this should I never ever die. Come back.
Fuck you, buddy.